First of all, let me thank Gifra and Shagun for anyone else who was involved in organizing this. It's certainly been very interesting and fun for me. Probably the most theoretical conference I've attended. Today's subject is maybe the whole week is a lot of it has to do with quantum information. I'm going to deliver a relatively small amount of information, I think. In fact, everything I tell you is really, far and away the work of Hong Chen here, who is a very, very talented guy. So I'm not very ambitious. I plan to give a little bit of introductory motivation, and then subject will really be to talk about topological entanglement entropy, which is a subject that I'm sure is known to most of you. The level of theory I'll discuss will be, kindergarten from the viewpoint of this conference. What I really want to talk about is, the successes that Hong Chen has had in calculating topological entanglement entropy using DMRG. And I'll talk about that for a few different models and how we think about the scaling and of it, and finish up by talking about some recent work that we've done trying to compare Rennie and von Neumann entropies for these kind of quantities. So these are the people involved. The scale of the photos are intended to convey some sense of the magnitude of the contributions. You maybe can't tell, but my picture's on there too. The first 2 days of this conference were on classification. We learned a lot of beautiful things. I can kind of think about this. People are filling in the entries of the 21st century, maybe 22nd century card catalog in the Library of Exotic Matter. We have different schemes of classifying things, like a Dewey Decimal and Library of Congress systems, maybe cohomology and K-matrix. And at various different, exotic phases. I had an earlier version of these talks where this was all spin liquids, but maybe now we should also have SPTs and SETs and any other fun acronyms that you can think of. The catalog is pretty impressive, but you might get a little worried when you... actually go to the library, at least the nonfiction section. And not a lot of books. So my own interest is more in trying to find some books. Why is the library in Korean? It's Korean. It's a spine of a book, right? It's quantum Hall effect and Z2 topological incident. Sorry, yeah, it's kind of small. I've been looking for some of the books for a while. So I'm interested in quantum spin liquids. These are, states of magnetic systems, of quantum spin systems that are not magnetically ordered. That in itself is not really an interesting thing, but from our point of view, they're interesting. These states are interesting because they're highly entangled states of quantum matter. The kind of prototype for these things are Anderson's RVB states of the type that Steve talked about a lot in the last talk. And we now know that these kinds of wave functions are just the kind of wave functions that describe interesting topological or even more exotic phases. So there's a lot of theoretical work on quantum spin liquids, and you can kind of roughly divide them into classes. This is my poor man's attempt at classification, but it's extremely crude. In some sense, the most simple, maybe you might think them, some people might think the most beautiful, are the topological phases, topological spin liquids, which, in this kind of RVB picture are ones that are built up out of just nearest neighbor, very short range dimers. Singlets, but of course we don't really care even about spin rotation symmetry or other symmetries and talking about these phases, and there are many of them, and they'd be classified by, at least in two dimensions, by topological quantum field theories, I guess maybe in any dimension. But there are other spin liquids that are gapless, which haven't been discussed as much. They're more a subject that might be akin to some of the ADS CFT material we had yesterday. There are some that we kind of understand pretty well, such as this U1 spin liquid in three dimensions, where we actually even have some possible candidate materials for them. And then there are more advanced ones, algebraic spin liquids in two dimensions, or spin on Fermi surface spin liquids in two or three dimensions. These are all very interesting possible states with increasing degree of gaplessness and non-triviality from kind of the field theory perspective. So for this talk, I kind of chose this subject based on what I thought the conference would be about. I'm not sure if I'm right. In fact, I didn't understand probably 80% of the talks, so I'm still not sure what the conference was about. But I've got to restrict to talking about topological spin liquids. So if we're really looking to actually find some of these rather than just classify them, we're going to have to look to real physical systems, that is materials. And this is showing a few materials which are some of the interesting possible candidates for these spin liquid systems. These are some quasi two-dimensional organics, which many people's eyes are the best candidates for quantum spin liquid states. This is Herbert Smithite, we heard about a bit in previous talks of this conference. There are also some three-dimensional materials that are very popular here in Canada. This is kind of a quantum spin ice pyrochlore. Get it a little bit closer to things that we can talk about in this conference. Each of these has a kind of a start model that might be at least a starting point for the discussion of the system. If we want to try and understand it and the physics of it, these organics are probably roughly described by some type of Hubbard model on an anisotropic triangular lattice. Herbert Smithite is a pretty good insulator. It's probably described basically by a Heisenberg model with some small corrections. These three-dimensional materials are more complicated. They're made up of F electron spins, which have very low symmetry. So we actually know, fortunately, for basically based on experiments and symmetry, we know what the Hamiltonian is probably for those materials better than the other two. So these are what I would call sort of semi-realistic models, probably at least at the 10% level, these describe quantitatively these materials. What can we do with them? There are many sort of methods we can apply, in this talk I'm going to be talking about DMRG. We're not really going to be talking about DMRG, we're talking about DMRG results mostly. But as Steve has said and made this point, I think, very beautifully in the last talk, it's a very powerful method for understanding phase diagrams of sort of semi-realistic models. One of the nice things about DMRG is it basically has no limitations on the Hamiltonian, apart from that it's fairly local and doesn't have an enormous Hilbert space. And you can study these Hamiltonians in reasonably wide strips of kind of 1D geometry. This is some work that we did recently. It was not the work of 2 days producing one long strip phase diagram. This thing probably took 2.5 years to construct this phase diagram, I'm afraid, of an anisotropic triangular lattice Heisenberg model. You have a one exchange coupling J along one direction, and the other two diagonals have a coupling J prime. In the end, we had to settle. We basically decided we couldn't convincingly produce the two-dimensional phase diagram. We settled for the phase diagram of a three-leg kind of cylinder with periodic boundary conditions as a function of this anisotropy, J prime over J, and magnetic field. You can see already in this kind of quasi 1D system, you have a rather rich phase diagram. We actually think the 2D diagram is not that different. It's pretty similar. If you're interested, I can show you what we think the 2D is like. But DMRG combined with all the other methods we have available to us to understand the DMRG data, which is not so easy necessarily, you can put together full phase diagrams like this. Unfortunately, this one doesn't have any really exotic phases. So, certainly from the point of view of this conference, everything here is incredibly boring. I mean, feel like but some people would find this interesting.
But Leon, can you just go back? Sorry. You said there was some uncertainty in getting the two-dimensional phase diagram.
Yes.
But in the context of the cesium copper chloride,
Yeah.
You, I mean, you presented to me what seemed like pretty convincing evidence that.
Yeah, so that's a much more.
It's more anisotropic. Or what, yeah, what,
why? Well, so this is extremely ambitious. This is getting a full phase diagram in the full phase space of anisotropy and magnetic field. So, cesium copper chloride, we know these parameters. I mean, we know J prime already. It's about here. So
that's a value that's easier.
If you only want to get a one-dimensional cut, you can learn a lot more, much more easily. It's just it's also that in this region of the phase diagram, we have kind of analytic tools that are based on proximity to this point one here. One is actually one-dimensional. You basically know everything exactly from 1D methods. So coming in this direction, we can analyze directly two dimensions. in an analytic way, whereas everywhere else we don't have that luxury.
So it's really the interplay between the DMR and analytics and the DMR gene.
So where the uncertainty is actually kind of in this intermediate region where we want to interpolate between what we know about in 2D. Over here, it's relatively easy. These are kind of robust. Right in here, there's some uncertainty. So exactly how we patch these together is a little tricky. But,
if you start from that end, you go from 120 degrees.
Where? Here? At zero field?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is that the standard X-ray model?
Well, so if this is, so if it were a two-dimensional system, it would be. So it's if we take a two-dimensional system, it has this 120 degree order. So that, you know, that breaks SO3 symmetry fully. So that symmetry breaking can't persist to one dimension. Well, this is three wide time. So actually, in the 1D system, it turns out that that's dimerized, and there's a very general argument that, in fact, this entire line is dimerized. You can understand that from the nonlinear sigma model for the SO3 order parameter. For any odd width cylinder, we believe that's the case. So that model doesn't contain spin liquid physics. We're more interested in models like this. The same sort of models. We need we'd like to use an unbiased method like the DMRG. We have models where we can unequivocally find spin liquid or topological phases. You know, we've heard about Levin-Wen models or Walker-Wang models, all these nice models, a toric code. These models have some exactly soluble limit that allows you to get a handle. When you start with these kind of microscopic models like this, any sort of topological gauge structure has to be completely emergent. You have no handle to find that in your model. So we really need diagnostics for topological or quantum spin liquid states that can be applied to general models with no understanding of where the gauge fields reside inside that model. And there aren't that many, but there's some that are known. Ground state degeneracy is expected. That's, I think, maybe not the easiest thing to look at with DMRG because it's it doesn't find the full spectrum of the Hamiltonian. But a rather nice one is this topological entanglement entropy. That's what I'm going to focus on. I'll say a little bit about ground state degeneracy. So we all know what entanglement entropy is. I just want to remind you, we can define it from the reduced density matrix of some, we're going to consider for a pure state. We take a pure state psi, we trace out part of the system B and look at a subsystem A. And from that, we could define either the von Neumann or more generally the Rennie entropies. They're different, but they both have the property that if we consider a very simple state, which is which consists of P singlets, which straddle the boundary between A and B, and otherwise is a direct product state of something in A and something in B, they all of these give the same entropy, P log 2. Okay. Now, everything to follow in this talk is based on a beautiful theoretical idea from Kitaev and Preskill and Levin and Wen that this entanglement entropy actually can give us some clue, some important universal characteristic of a topological phase, that if you take this region A to have a smooth boundary and you look at its entanglement entropy, it's a gapped phase, so the leading term in the entanglement entropy as a function of this length of the boundary is just proportional to the length. That's the area law. But there's a correction, which is universal, which we'll call the topological entanglement entropy. We define gamma to be positive here. The correction is negative. And it gives a total quantum dimension of all the anions in the theory. For applying this to lattice models, there's a little bit of an issue here, which is what is a smooth boundary? Okay. So the original proposals really were for a compact region of your lattice, and you know, you quickly find you can't draw a smooth boundary. You try and draw a smooth boundary, subdivision of the states into A and B, and you know, really it corresponds to some kind of pixelated boundary of sites. And so this thing has got all sorts of corners in it. It's not clear how to define the length. We can't really achieve a smooth boundary of this type ever on a lattice. Okay. So you need to do something better. And one prescription is given in these papers. This is an example of it. One way to do it is to look at some more complicated geometry and consider various different subdivisions. You can look at the entropy of A or the entropy of B or the entropy of A union B and all these things, and try and construct a judicious combination which subtracts off all the effects associated with the non-smoothness of the boundary. And so that's certainly possible in principle. This is the simplest prescription. It's called the ABC prescription sometimes. And it's been worked. I'll show you a little bit of results using prescription like this. It's a little bit challenging numerically, if you think about it. So one simple reason is that to calculate this, you have to calculate many different entropies. All of them are large. They all obey the area law, and you have to subtract. All these large quantities cancel, and then you're going to be adding up very small quantities that you have to get with very accurately to get a good result. Also, we expect that you know, this basic law is only true for large L. It's a long distance property of the system, and it'll be approached with exponential accuracy in a gapped system. But so the characteristic length that appear in the exponential will be the smallest features involved in your calculations, which will be, you know, some fraction of the total size of your system if you build a region like this. Okay. Nevertheless, you know, you can try and work this. It is challenging. Here are some results from Roger Melko's group here at PI in Waterloo, where they did this. They looked at the second Reni entropy by quantum Monte Carlo. They used, this is actually a construction due to Levin and Wen, but a similar type of cancellation was attempted here. And you can see that in this case, because of the different topology of the regions, you expect 2 gamma, not gamma, at zero temperature when you have a pure state. On lowering the temperature, they can see this is a model which is in a Z2 spin liquid state, so gamma should be log 2. And they can kind of see the approach to log 2 here. It's for the largest systems, they can see log 2, but really they're only getting halfway to the actual universal topological entanglement entropy that we know is the case for that state. And that's, you know, this is kind of heroic efforts. So there's turns out there's a simpler way to go, which is what Hong Chen has been pursuing, which is to work on the cylinder, which is very natural for DMRG, and to take a straight boundary on the cylinder. Okay, it's basically the only choice that you can make if you want to have a single boundary that doesn't have any sharp features in it. And you can do this for any lattice. I've drawn it here for Kagame lattice. We just subdivide the system into a region on the left and a region on the right. In this case, there are no intermediate length scales. The only length scale is the lattice spacing, and then the length Lx along the cylinder and the length Ly around. And DMRG is, you know, very effective at considering a very long system, so it's kind of natural to remove this longest length scale by taking the length relatively long compared to Ly. And we want, of course, Ly to be much bigger than 1. In that case, we can expect the entropy to obey this you know, field theoretic formula with corrections that are exponential in the circumference of the cylinder, which is a shorter length. And there's a correlation length which might depend on the Reni index a priori.
So why is this exponential?
Basically because there's a gap and there's no other length scale in the system. I mean, scaling more or less implies this. So you can also see this. I'll tell you a little bit later. I'll talk about series expansion results, but it's obvious. Unless it's not.
So, Leon, at the risk of, you know, being back, let's go back. So, let me imagine you cut it along the bonds, you know, the
like this?
Degree bonds. No. Along the 45 degree.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
It's an angle theta. I'm just curious. It does, you know, then you scale. There's, you know, some dimensionless number, which is the angle. Jamaican?
Well, so that will affect the area law coefficient, first of all, which is not totally non-universal thing. That's, I think, the main issue. The problem is then you'll get some, you'll have to be very judicious about what size cylinders you use. You need to use a series of cylinders where the shapes don't change. Nothing in the geometry changes as you increase the cylinder width. But if you want a more formal way to think about scaling this, the way I like to think about it is you choose a boundary, you choose the geometry of your simulation, and you fix it. And then you just scale everything up by some multiple, yeah. 2, 3, 4, 5. That series you can compare. And there's no more geometrical content in it.
Well, no, but that's why I was just wondering if you do it at some angle.
You could do that with some angle, but
this seems like there's a dimensionless number, but that's not going to make any difference.
That won't affect gamma. It'll affect this. But the for the topological system, for gapless systems, it can affect that gamma. Okay. But I should say that DMRG, it's not easy to do any boundary other than this. So this really depends on.
Can you go back?
Okay.
So Stefan Levin, you know the result by.
Yes.
So he seems to find a strong dependence on the entropy of the guy. It's a function of the length of the cylinder for very large cylinders. Do you have a comment on this? Do you know what this is about? It's a venture surprise. Which I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, we don't see that for the von Neumann entropy. Okay, I'll talk about Rennie later, but. Okay, yeah, we don't see that. I mean, one has to be very careful with conversions as well. But I mean, maybe this is a little bit of a comment. So, I stole these pictures from Wikipedia, which is the level of my understanding of what DMRG does. But, there's this beautiful sweeping thing that goes on, and you split. Basically, DMRG works directly with the Schmidt decomposition of the wave function, and it's always Schmidt decomposed sort of around some site. And in reality, this on a 2D system, this has to be some snaking path. So what's available to you very readily at any stage of this computation is a decomposition into Schmidt coefficients into the, quote, the left and right half of the system. And that left and right half is defined in terms of the snaking path. Okay, so by a typical conventional way of defining the snaking path, it's not difficult to get a decomposition into the left and right half of a cylinder. But if you wanted a decomposition on some other cut, I think the only way to do it in DMRG would be to change your snaking path. And it becomes less natural. So this kind of cut is pretty natural. This is the controversial model. I don't want to spend too much about time on this one, actually, because I want to talk in more detail about how we do these things. And this model is actually one of the most challenging ones. But it's the first one that Hong Chen tried this on. So this is a long-studied model in the theory of frustrated quantum magnetism, square lattice with J1 and J2. Classically, it has a transition when J2 is a half of J1 between a Nail state and a state at with order at pi, and another Nail state with order at π0. In the quantum system, it's been known for some time that there's an intermediate region without magnetic order. Exactly what happens in there is, has been controversial. There have been lots and lots of different approaches applied to them. Most of them are not really controlled, so we don't know really how to trust it. So in some recent work, Hong Chen and Hong Yao and I looked at this with DMRG, and I won't show you much of this, but we constructed this phase diagram basically by studying various gaps in the system and trying to extrapolate them to the large system limit, which suggested that this intermediate regime had both a spin and singlet gap, actually, and no perceivable order of spin or dimer type. So then we looked at this von Neumann entropy at two values following the kind of reasoning that Steve espoused of choosing points that are really in the middle of the phase to study as carefully as possible and look at this von Neumann entropy as a function of system width. And you can see, we're really interested in the large distance asymptotics. So at small distances, you get values that don't form a straight line. Things tend to look straight on these plots. I'll show you kind of plots later which bring out whether these things are really straight. But they're pretty straight, and you should be extrapolating from large L, okay? And if you extrapolate back from large L, you get some intercept, which is the constant part of the large L asymptotics. You know, and lo and behold, you get a value here, you know, which is within a few percent of the expected universal value of log 2. It seems odd for that to be coincidence, but...
doesn't it seem odd that it works so well?
Well, so let me, I'll show you cases where it doesn't work so well. Okay.
Whether it's possible just to add some kind of diagonal and then you try to drive the system to the trivial just gas in that space.
Oh, one can do all sorts of things. We
to see whether this feature breaks down in the process.
Yeah. Well, we added various staggered fields, not for to push towards the magnetic state, but to push towards the dimer states that people think are natural here, and which we actually see short distance correlations of. We did the kind of studies that Steve talked about, where you put a pinning field on the boundary and look at how these correlations decay into the bulk. You know, a little different from what he found. We found correlation lengths which are growing sublinearly with system size, so kind of looking like they would saturate. But
whether those correlations do break is a intersection, making a section go to zero.
Oh, well, so that's a very tricky business. If you have to, so you add perturbations that break translational symmetry. Then the nice scaling here is going to be messed up. You introduce other short distance scales. I don't know how to do that safely with entanglement entropy.
No, but what if you just tune the Hamiltonian in a way where you go into an ordered say?
Oh, yeah, then it doesn't work.
I mean,
yeah.
Obvious. You just jump
oh, it's obvious. I'll show you lots of plots like that later, yeah. It's totally obvious. Yeah.
Steve showed this similar plot for a model where this honeycomb J1J2. Where he also said that this diagonal correlation meant that
So in his case, he said the dimer correlation length grows faster than or equal to linearly with width, and we find one that grows sublinearly. Also, this plot, I mean, I want to say, I think it's important that there are quite a few points on this plot. They're all cylinders of exactly the same geometry that are being compared. If you looked on Steve's plot, that was not the case. Okay, you were choosing the points that were the lower boundary of the entanglement entropy, which were actually cylinders of different geometry. I don't think you can compare directly cylinders of different geometry. I think but there are lots of subtleties. So I want to talk about some of the subtleties, and there's interesting physics in them. So one of them is a state dependence. So you know, one of the basic characteristics of topological phases is that they have a ground state degeneracy. So on a torus, a twofold ground state degeneracy is expected. Okay, and roughly, you can think about this ground state degeneracy as corresponding to the presence or absence of a magnetic excitation passing through the center of the cylinder, a vison. So I like to think in terms of a flux zero or flux pi passing through that cylinder. We can think about these two as sort of the two basis states for the degenerate subspace zero and one. And it turns out there's a very nice paper from Ashvin's group in 2011, which shows. Well, it's known for in a limited context before this, but shows that actually the entanglement entropy for a cut like this, which has a non-trivial topology, it's different from the cut in a plane. Okay, it actually depends on which state you have. So we can, in this two-dimensional subspace, we could choose these very nice states, which either have a vison or don't in them. These are what you could call minimally entangled states or minimum entropy states, and one obtains the universal value log 2 for such a state. However, if you choose different superpositions, you get a different value of gamma. And the kind of worst case is if you choose an equal weight superposition of these two states, in which case actually the entropy increases by log 2 relative from that. So these have higher entropy. Remember, gamma is a negative correction. And so the value you'd get for such a state is actually 0. Okay. So these minimum entropy states... I said they correspond to eigenstates of the flux. So you can think about there's a loop operator in the kind of toric code language. It would be a product of sigma z's around the cylinder like this. And that has a definite value in these states. The other eigenstates are eigenstates of sort of the dual operator, which is a product of kind of gauge fields, the sigma x operators along the length of the cylinder. If it's an eigenstate of this, it's an equal weight superposition of the two others. These states have a definite parity of the number of loops crossing the cylinder. That gives you a little more information about the left if you know something about the right, and that's why these have higher entropy. Okay, so just to be explicit, the entropy of these plus minus states is equal to the entropy of the minimum entropy states plus log 2. Now, which one is actually the ground state for a physical system? That's determined by, the physical system doesn't have an exact degeneracy, typically. So we take a cylinder of length Lx and Ly. We can think that there's some effective Hamiltonian in this two-dimensional subspace. There is an off-diagonal term in this minimum entropy basis, H, and some diagonal term, H prime. So how do you think about these? So this off-diagonal term is the term that connects you from the state with a Vison state without. You can think that happens basically by the process of a Vison coming out of one end of the loop and the flux actually tunneling across the system and then coming back in. And so the amplitude for such a thing will be exponential in the length of the cylinder, actually typically proportional to the circumference. The other process, other term comes from, if you like, a virtual pair of a spin-on, anti-spin-on pair nucleating out of the vacuum. It's an electric charge of the toric code, if you want to think about it. And they tunnel around and then annihilate. And they're sensitive to the electric field going around the cylinder. They're sensitive to the flux. It's like an Aronoff Bohm effect for them. And so they will give a different energy depending on whether the Vison is present or not. That tunneling could happen anywhere along the length of the cylinder, and so the amplitude for that process is proportional to Lx, and it's exponential in the circumference. Okay. So for a long cylinder, which is kind of the natural thing to study in DMRG, this actually grows with the length of the cylinder, and so typically H prime will become larger than H, which will determine that these minimum entropy states are actually the ground states. Okay. Everything else equal, if these amplitudes in front, which are numbers that we don't know a priori, are comparable, then long cylinders will typically have minimum entropy states for their ground state.
Yeah. Is it the same correlation then? It should be different correlation.
Yeah. So a priori, we don't know. So they're different, right? So they're related to gaps for Visons and spin-ons. Okay.
The exponentials are also different. So why are you paying attention to the feedback?
Because we fix, let's say you fix a cylinder circumference and vary L. Okay, that's typically what you do in a DMRG simulation. You look at a long cylinder. Okay. But it really depends on the order of limits. Okay, so we can.
So it's kind of a lucky coincidence that DMRG also favors low entanglement.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I'll talk about that. Let me get to that point as well. So. We decided to look at this carefully in the toric code model. So everyone's familiar with this. You have this model with plaquette and site operators. You can also think about this as a Z2 gauge theory. In our simulation, we kind of work with the thing rotated at 45 degrees. So the spins live on the sites of a square lattice. That way we can make a nice cut between these spins without going across spins. If you look at, of course, the pure toric code, this is trivial. People have calculated this a million times over. You can get the whole entanglement spectrum analytically. Not surprisingly, the entropy is exactly some simple number times Ly minus log 2. Okay. And DMRG gives that. What's more interesting is to perturb the model with fields that break the solubility of it. You can perturb with fields in the x or the z direction. And there's a phase diagram that's been worked out by various authors. This is kind of the Higgs, Z2 Higgs model. So there's a topological phase in this region where both the fields are, roughly less than 0.32, 0.33. So here's some DMRG results along the symmetric line where these two fields are equal. They're at these three points, two within the topological phase and one outside. You actually can't see the difference between the two points within the phase. They're on top of one another in the resolution of this plot. Where the point outside is this blue one, you can see there's a little bit of finite size effect. And then once you get out, the curve looks like this. And you just compare the extrapolation. You get rather accurate value of log 2 from this extrapolation and 0 when you're outside the topological phase. So we'd like to look at this kind of state dependence, though. So we can do that in a very nice way by considering this special case where this field Hz is 0. So if we do that, then actually this operator, which is a kind of string along the length of the cylinder, actually commutes with the Hamiltonian. So it's a good quantum number. So the ground state will be an eigenstate of this operator G. And that eigenstate is always one of these plus minus eigenstates. Okay. So the absolute ground state, which has to be an eigenstate of this, is not a minimally entangled state. In terms of this effective Hamiltonian, it means that when Hz is 0, actually H prime is 0. Okay, the prefactor in front is exactly 0. So in this model, DMRG data looks something like this. We can look at the expectation value of G as a function of the number of states kept in the DMRG for different system sizes. So we look at some particular curve here, let's say the blue one. It's running along. It's actually 0. So it starts initially in a state which is not an eigenstate of G. The G has eigenvalues plus or minus 1. And then at some point, it figures out what the ground state is, and it jumps up here. The energy changes by some incredibly tiny amount at this point, 10 to the minus 7, something like that. But this G changes a lot. So at this point, it's found an eigenstate of this G operator. It's found this superposition of Vison and no Vison state. If you look at the same time at the entanglement entropy, it also jumps. Okay, and it jumps and increases by log 2. Which is exactly the extra entanglement that you need to superpose the Vison and no Vison state. So now you can study this crossing point. One thing you notice is that as you increase the length of the cylinder, the number of states required to actually make this jump to the absolute system ground state gets longer and longer and longer, which tells you that the DMRG, we know it's a low entanglement approximation. It favors these minimal entropy states. And so we can ask, how many states do you need to keep to actually get the jump to the absolute ground state, which has higher entropy? And that is their values for different cylinder circumference. And you can see that actually this is a log scale. This is a linear scale. It grows exponentially in the length of the cylinder. Okay. So this getting this last qubit of entanglement takes an exponential effort. Then you can actually... since we actually observe this thing in the process, we can take the entanglement that we achieved before it jumps to the system ground state and after and extrapolate those two. If you extrapolate the final system ground state, it's this red curve. If you extrapolate the entropy obtained before that jump, it's the bottom curve. For the largest systems, we can't make the jump. We can't get it to converge to it. But you can see that the... So the minimal entropy state indeed converges nicely. If you extrapolate it back, you get log 2. if you extrapolate the others, you get 0. Okay.
Can you get metastability in the DMRG? Are you kind of, when you change it, would you get stuck in the wrong one for a while?
I think probably, yes. Steve could probably speak more to that. But I mean, you could kind of think of that as this. I mean, I don't.
You certainly can.
Okay. How much time do I have, Chairman?
Seven minutes.
Oh, I think you're cutting me off. Okay, Ruth, question.
You've made a very strong case that the DMRG favors getting this minimally entropy state.
Yeah.
But you were working with a fine-tuned Hamiltonian in the sense that you make sure that the two minimal states have exactly the same energy output. Exponentially suppressed curve. So the question is, for a generic Hamiltonian, you have boundary terms that will penalize one of the suppliers.
No. So the two states are, they don't have any boundary difference in energy. That's when we say that the topological degeneracy on a cylinder is 2 and on a torus it's 4. Mm-hmm. It's exactly because there's an energy penalty for 2 out of the 4 states at a generic boundary. So the two states we're considering are those that don't have any boundary cost.
For a generic Hamiltonian, for a generic charge of Hamiltonian?
Yes.
But then why did you have to fine-tune?
I had to fine-tune so that the ground state was actually not a minimally entangled state. So I gave you this argument earlier that for a generic Hamiltonian, where both these H and H prime are non-zero, in the long system limit, it actually always gives a minimally entangled state as the ground state. So it could be that for some reason H prime, generically both are not zero. It could be for some reason H prime is small, and then for some region of length, the plus minus states are actually the ground states. But for long enough cylinders, they'll always.
So you're saying the boundaries will not penalize one of
them. No. Okay, so you know, here's a summary of some of Steve and other people's work on the Kagame. He explained already that there's a spin liquid state in there. We can look at it as well, in again, right in the middle of that phase, and you know, get the same kind of very compelling data. Actually, this is Kagame is almost the best case because it has extremely short correlation length. So we get values that are better than a percent accuracy for this log 2. Hongchen actually looked at a number of other cases. I just flashed these. You know, here is a kind of model for the nu equals a half fractional quantum Hall effect where the actually the quantum dimension is square root of 2. So you get minus log of square root of 2. You can see that nicely there. You could look at various non-topological models. This is a transverse field Ising model. This is some quantum spin system that has a singlet ground state. You, no matter where you are, which phase of those models you are, you get very reliably, as long as you don't approach the critical point too close, you get very reliably zero topological entanglement entropy. Okay, so I want to spend the last bit of the talk talking about comparison of von Neumann and Rennie entropies. So there are various reasons you might like to use one or the other. You know, von Neumann is kind of has certain extra properties, a strong subadditivity. I don't really understand that well, but it seems to be a nice property. It's only true of the Rennie entropy. It's also this entropy that corresponds to the physical entropy if you look at an excited state. But these Rennie entropies are often convenient. They give bounds, and they have nice monotonicity properties with the Rennie index. They give bounds on the von Neumann entropy. Mostly, they're convenient for theoretical calculations of various types. One, you know, in field theory, you usually calculate this thing by replica method. So these are really the things that you work with. Quantum Monte Carlo basically works with always with Rennie entropies, Rennie second Rennie or third Rennie. So all of these are expected from field theory to give the universal topological entanglement entropy. So it's really a sort of a computational question. Yeah.
Who picks their wardrobe?
Yeah. I didn't make any real choice.
Well, you did make a choice.
Intentional choice about who's evil and who's good, but is that? Yeah, maybe it should have been the other way around.
The father of the other one, right?
Aha! No, that's Yoda. That's Yoda. That's Yoda. Yeah, it should have been Luke. Should have been Luke. That would have been good. Yeah. You know, in DMRG, you have actually the full Schmidt decomposition, so it's trivial to compute all the entropies once you've computed one. So let's go back to the toric code model. Here we're sitting, you know, somewhat close to the critical point, so there's a correlation length of about one lattice spacing, one to two lattice spacings, depending how you measure it. So it's not zero. And you compare the, start making the same plots, not just for von Neumann, but also for Rennie, and you notice there's a, you know, distinct dependence on this thing. Okay, so I claim these are all fully converged plots. If you actually, you know, do this linear extrapolation, just look at those curves, it looks fairly good. You do that extrapolation and just plot the extrapolated topological entropies here for these two different cases of different types of applied fields. You know, the von Neumann is the black plot here. It stays very close to the universal value, even as you get quite close to the critical point where you leave the phase. But there are more and more pronounced deviations as you look at higher Rennie indices. Okay. So you can ask, you know, are we just not calculating this right? Is there some problem, a numerical problem? Can we get some understanding? So we know the answer analytically for the toric code model. So we can actually do perturbation theory, or at least Rajiv can do perturbation theory around that, an expansion in these magnetic fields to see what we can expect analytically. So basically, this is some expansion. You just take the ground state wave function, you start acting on it with these fields. To produce, you know, modifications to the ground state wave function. The perturbative expansion takes the form of clusters. These bonds are the bonds on which the gauge fields or the spin operators in the Kataev model live. And basically, you get a contribution to the entanglement entropy only when these clusters span the boundary, which is the dashed line between the left and the right-hand side of the system. Okay. Moreover, any cluster could appear anywhere along this boundary. So as a consequence, there's a just additive contribution from all those clusters. It means everything you get scales with the circumference of the cylinder. Okay. To get something that doesn't scale with the circumference of the cylinder, you need a cluster which actually is big enough to fully span the, the width of the cylinder. At that point, you start seeing corrections to the area law. So what one gets to lowest order, it becomes very hard to do, actually. It's a little trickier than standard series expansions. Is we get a correction up to fourth order in H for cylinders that have width of larger than 4 of this form. And you only get a correction to the area law coefficient. OK, you're going to shut me down. But I think I'm going to finish. So for basically, you need an order of H, which is comparable to the width of the cylinder before you get any dependence on the cylinder width, apart from just the area law. Okay. And that's an indication of this exponential scaling of the correction to this area law form, okay, with the cylinder width. And one thing I want you to notice, though, is that the size of the correction grows as you increase the Rennie index. So for large alpha, it just grows linearly in alpha. So the area law coefficient actually becomes very strongly dependent on this field. Okay. And remember that whenever we extract, when we extract the entanglement entropy, we are very sensitive to, we're pulling out a subdominant term. So we're very sensitive to that. If the area law term is large or very strongly with parameters, we're going to be less able to extract the topological entanglement entropy. So you can check the area law coefficient. That we can just compare directly to the series expansion. And that's shown here. The circles are the theoretical H to the fourth expansion, and the black dots are the numerical calculations. Now, I think it's working pretty darn well, especially when you compare the scales here. These are very small scales. And 0.33 about is the critical point. So we're approaching to, you know, well within 10, a few percent of the quantum critical point out of the phase, and is still working. So it's pretty clear DMRG is getting the line term correctly. Here's what I was just saying about the sensitivity. So it gives us a little bit of understanding in why the Rennie entropies may be less reliably used for extracting the topological entanglement entropy. So we can try and look at that more directly and see if, you know, when you're actually doing the calculation, are can we see signs that we're not reliably extracting the entropy? How do we know? So a nice way to do this is to remember, we're interested in the long distance asymptotics of the entropy. So a nice way to do it is to do a running fit. We just take, for a given cylinder width Ly, we take the Ly and Ly plus 2 entropies and use those to extrapolate back the topological entropy. And now do that as a function of Ly. Okay. So if you do this for the von Neumann entropy, that's this black plot here, you can see there's a finite size effect. It has this interesting non-monotonic form. It seems to rise a little bit and then come back down. And you can see it's coming down and nicely, you know, it never gets that far from the universal value. You can see it's kind of approaching, seems to be approaching the universal value.
But the correlation length isn't 6 or something. I mean, it's
no, the correlation length here is 1 to 2.
So what, okay. What gives you that scale?
Well, so that's the correlation. You have to ask what correlation length. So I don't really have this an understanding of this, okay? If you just look at the Rennie entropy, the first Rennie entropy, you can see it has the same kind of form. It rises, and it's probably going to start coming down again, but it rises more, and so clearly the asymptotics is much further out, and the problem just gets worse and worse with increasing entropies. So there's some theoretical problem to understand why this happens, okay? But it's definitely happens. If you look at the von Neumann entropy, this is exactly one measure of the correlation length. Okay, there are different correlation lengths you can define, but this is a correlation length for just SZ correlations, I think. You know, it clearly diverges at the critical point, but for the values we're looking at here, it's, you know, it's between 1 and 2 lattice spacings. Okay, and so for the von Neumann, this seems to be good enough, but for the Rennies, it's already terrible. And for the Kagame lattice, the problems are much more severe. So these points here are for the von Neumann entropy for these two values. But if you look at the Rennie entropy, you know, it's way off already at that point. Okay, and we have less points, so it's not as useful to do this two-point fitting there. If you look at the just do the naive extrapolation as a function of the Rennie index, you know, for von Neumann, you get quite accurate value, but for Rennie's, it's, you know, this is how bad it's working. So, and you could compare that to toric code. The corrections are quite a bit smaller, but still. So that's, I guess I'm out of time. Basically, just presenting you Hong Chen's beautiful results. Thanks for your time.
So you showed this the dependence of the area law coefficient on parameters for any entropy.
Yeah.
But what has that got to do with the fact that the topological entanglement entropy is worse? You never really change the parameters there. Right?
Yeah, it's not obvious that it has much to do with it. I want to say that it indicates that there's strong variation of the area law coefficient with parameters. Maybe we can imagine that the, somehow that goes along with big finite size effects. I don't have an understanding of how that's connected, though. Basically, this is an observation. And there's no a priori reason why the correlation length in these quantities, different Reni indices, need to be the same. I don't know why they would be so drastically different, but it appears to be the case.
Yeah, so I have a comment related to this. I mean, I think that Reni entropy is like a thermodynamic entropy of the same Hamiltonian with lower temperature, like compared to the von Neumann entropy.
Mm-hmm.
If you think the density metrics as the thermodynamics of Hamiltonian. So the fact that it strongly depends on the Reni index is saying like you have some kind of specific heat in the system, which tells you have a lot of low lying mode in the entanglement spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of my explanation. I don't know if that, that's meaningful for you, but since in DMRG you already have the energy spectrum, you already have all the spectrum.
Yeah.
So you can directly look at them, and it's just telling you that you have a lot of low-lying modes.
Sure. I guess that's true. Doesn't tell me why, but.
But that's yeah. Like the edge state, that means you have some edge states.
Edge states.
So in this toric code model, depending on boundary conditions on the cylinder, you can either have two ground states or one ground state. And I'm wondering whether you would be able, like, that because this minimal entanglement.
There are two ground states in this,
no,
this choice.
You can have sorry?
There are two in this case.
So like
what we took for toric code has two ground states. Sure.
But you can, if you change the boundary conditions, you can make it have only one unique ground state.
I guess we probably could.
But the electric edge or a magnetic edge, and then if one was electric, the other one's magnetic, but then you have one unique ground state.
Mm.
I'm just wondering whether you would be sensitive.
Have two, right? There's always one particle which you can't hit if the edge moves to the cylinder and actually moves at the edge.
No, but if...
Yeah, different boundaries.
Yeah. So
maybe on the two opposite ends,
one,
you put
yeah,
different
two
boundary
opposite
conditions.
Ends. So I'm wondering whether you would be sensitive to this, because you're... It's important for you that you have two, so you get this minimally entangled state. Whether you'd be able to numerically tell, like,
say again, you say if.
So in principle,
yeah.
On a cylinder, you can have either two ground states
yes.
or one ground state.
Okay, I guess that's
so
true for toric code. I think it's not true for a physical spin model, but.
Really?
Yeah, because I think it really relies on what the vacuum is outside the system. And there's a definite meaning to what the vacuum is, because the vacuum is a non-topological phase. The gauge fields are some emergent thing, and we say that the outside is some Higgs phase, so we should think about it as a Poisson condensate. I think that fixes how you should think of the boundary. Well, you can have, so you're allowed to have extra degeneracies at the boundary that are really just associated with localized states, but that's not topological. That can be just measured at the boundary. So that's a different, the extra degeneracies are allowed, and indeed we can see that in some model. But the topological degeneracy, I think, is robust. Otherwise, it would.
So one more question.
Yeah, so I guess I have a general question both to you and Steve. Given that DMRG on this long cylinder favors these minimally entangled states, suppose it's a competing gapless state. You know, can DMRG just miss it because of for technical reasons? Because that's a highly entangled, that has more entanglement than the gap states. Can you just not?
Well, first of all, it's not obvious it has more entanglement. I mean, it all, that's all the, which has more entanglement is mostly in the area law coefficient.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think DMRG eventually gets the ground state regardless, but that's my feeling.
In the toric code case, you did. You know, that was finely tuned to show this effect. And that's,
and
that was
and,
the most dramatic thing we've seen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can always, you can decrease the width of the system and you can decrease the length, and, but in the end, you're doing an exact parameterization. So you have usually have some handle to tell if there's some sort of issue.
I can't rule out the possibility. I mean, what you're really imagining is that there's a, our system is close to a first order phase transition.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then what one should really do is move the Hamiltonian around a little bit. I mean, basically, it's bad to work near a first order phase transition.
Okay. That's I think it's right because we will reconvene at 11:15. So let's thank the team.